First, a program note. The following podcast includes adult situations and language.
You have a prepaid call from an inmate at the California State Prison, Los Angeles County, Lancaster, California. This call and your telephone number will be monitored and recorded. To accept this call, say or dial 5 now. Thank you for using Global Tail Link.
I'm in suburban Los Angeles, standing in the home office of Jillian Lauren, a married mother of two who has played a significant role in the Sam Little story. I'd say it's actually more war room than home office. There's a bookcase with shelves lined primarily with true crime books. On another wall are several original prison cell sketches Sam Little made of his victims. Another set of shelves contains more than a dozen binders, murder books, that Lauren has put together using details from her own research and the confessions she has drawn from Sam Little herself. And on another wall is a map of L.A. with the locations of murders charted across it. There's also an amazingly detailed timeline of Sam Little's movements during his years in L.A. All of it is what you'd see in the war room of a real detective bureau or on a television show like Bosch. Only this is Jillian Lauren's home, and she carries no badge and no gun. She carries a pen. She's a writer. Standing in front of the map, Lauren contemplates the path of destruction Little blazed through the city during the 1980s and 90s.
These are like all my Los Angeles locations, and I've really been focused on L.A. Because I'm here.
So, you know, and I know law enforcement here and have good relationships with them. So it's easier to focus on. And I feel like you got to focus on something. What am I going to do? Explore 93 murders? It's impossible. It's an impossible case.
From there, Lauren turns to another wall and the color sketches of women with dead eyes.
These were the original drawings of the victims, but I've got some new ones. And this is Alice. Here. This one I was like, I was suspicious of this drawing because it looked too much like T-Money. That's T-Money. But that one doesn't look like anything else I've seen from him. So I am very curious once they close that case to see what she actually looked like.
The Alice she mentioned is a murder victim she helped identify through a synthesis of Sam Little's confessions, research, and long hours of legwork in South L.A. On the other hand, T-Money is an unknown. Sam Little says he killed her in 1996, his last murder in L.A. But so far, his confession has not been connected to a murder case or a missing person report, and the woman in the drawing has not been identified any further than the street name Little provided. Jillian Lauren won't rest until she identifies her and brings her some measure of justice.
T-Money haunts me, or holds me, or... It keeps me thinking and trying.
I'm Michael Connelly, and you're listening to Murder Book. This is Chapter 9 of The Women Who Stopped Sam Little. I consider Jillian Lauren to be one of those women, and we'll hear her story next.
In 1996, someone knew her. Someone knew her.
She has established a rapport with a serial killer.
She's my big sadness.
Thanks to BetterHelp for supporting Murder Book. For 10% off your first month, go to betterhelp.com/murderbook. That's betterhelp.com/murderbook. Start living a better life today. The most infamous unsolved murder in the history of Los Angeles occurred 73 years ago. Elizabeth Short, who lived on the fringes of Hollywood, was abducted, tortured, mutilated, and murdered. Her body was found discarded in a field in two pieces. Though Short shared some similarities with the victim Sam Little would murder decades later, her death would not go unnoticed by society. She became known as the Black Dahlia, and her unsolved murder has been the subject of myriad books, movies, and documentaries in the years since. In death, she became a cultural icon. Jillian Loren is a novelist, memoirist, and a long-form journalist. 10 years ago, she hit the bestseller list with her first book, a personal memoir called Some Girls, My Life in a Harem. It chronicled her time in the harem of the Prince of Brunei. Critics loved the book, one calling Loren a punk rock Scheherazade. She followed it with another memoir and a novel, and then set her sights on a crime novel that would be built around the Black Dahlia case. An LAPD detective she knew said he could set her up with the cold case detective who was assigned as the custodian of the still unsolved murder and its records. Loren made the appointment. The detective's name was Mitzi Roberts. Loren went into the police department hoping to come out with some details about the Black Dahlia case she could seed her novel with. Instead, she came out with a true life story that spoke to her.
I tend to try to end an interview on a high note. So one of my routine questions is, what are you most proud of that you've done in your career? And she said, well, I'm proud of them all. But I did catch this serial killer once, and that was pretty cool. You know, and this is after an hour and a half of interviewing her, and I was like, wait, whoa, what? Back up. And then she told me about Sam. She told me about the Sam Little case, a little bit about it. And I remember one of the things she said was that when she met him, he actually stood up out of his wheelchair and was like, and turned in a second into a monster, visibly a monster, who was expressing this incredible rage. And to me, that sounded like a really terrifying experience and a terrifying scene. And I said, were you frightened? And she said, I'm not afraid of that fucking animal. And I was like, first of all, I need a little bit of that in my life, that kind of courage. And also I was fascinated. And I went home and I looked it up. And it seemed like a really underreported case. I thought, here's this serial killer. And he was convicted for these three crimes. The trial seemed fascinating. Mitzi had told me that she believed that he was guilty of many, many more murders. And she had tried to mobilize law enforcement around the country. And there often aren't resources to devote to cold cases. You really need to hit the right detective with that kind of passion for cold cases. especially in smaller jurisdictions. And I called her back and I said, would it be okay with you if I looked into this case more? Because I think this is fascinating and I'd like to cover it. And maybe I can generate some interest. Yeah, maybe I can put a little heat on it. Maybe I can generate some interest. Maybe I can get someone interested in Florida and Mississippi and you know, any one of the many, many states in which he was killing. I mean, I of course had no idea the scope of it at the time at all. The only confirmed cases I had at that time were three. So she said, yeah, with my blessing, go ahead. Go for it. We always thought this case was underreported. We always thought there was so much potential in it. And so I did. And then I found myself in the middle of a maelstrom of a news cycle and press and confessions, and certainly was not what I expected.
Lauren researched the case, then sent a letter to Sam Little in prison. They started a correspondence, and then she started visiting him. She was not allowed to record their conversations, so eventually their conversations moved to the phone, in which Little was allowed to make calls from the prison 15 minutes at a time. Lauren recorded these, and in every call, he confessed to murder.
It was shocking, first of all. It was one of those cliche moments when he started confessing to me. Because until then, he had maintained his innocence. Mm-hmm. You know, it's an upside down case. It's always a victim narrative with Sam. He's the victim. So I did that with him for a whole day, and I was like, I'm going to go back one more time. And he can lie to me all he wants all day once. And if he's not going to start telling me the truth, then, like, why would I waste my time? Why am I going to go let somebody bullshit me? So I was like, okay, if he starts talking today, then I'm going to stick with this story. And if he doesn't, then I'm out. And now I know what a prison looks like. And, okay, you know, lesson learned. And when he started confessing, it was still the best moment of the whole experience for me. It was so exciting. It was like finally getting answers to some of the questions that, as somebody who was a fan of true crime and read Helter Skelter when I was 9 years old and was always interested in deviant psychology, I was like, oh, I'm gonna get it. I'm gonna get the answers now. These are the questions I've always wanted to ask. You know, how do you decide where to dump a body? I mean, when do you get to ask those questions? Never. So it was so electric, and it was like that cliche of, you know, like ice water, just like from my skull to my toes. I was like, is this really happening? Is he confessing to me?
3 years later, you could call her a serial killer whisperer. She has Sam Little's ear and he has hers. Lauren's life has become a mission to bring dignity and justice to Sam Little's victims. She spends her days working the cases, taking calls from Sam Little in prison and using the information he provides in an effort to match the confessions to cases, whether they be murders or missing person reports. Lauren believes her status as a citizen sleuth gives her an advantage.
Basically, what I feel I have to offer is maybe more bandwidth than most detectives have, because this is all I do. So I'm like, I have a lot of bandwidth, and I have a lot of motivation, and I'm really good at I'm really good at archival research.
You also have Sam Little's ear.
And I also talk to the killer. So I can go and say, hey, that doesn't seem right. And then go back to him and say, like, for instance, I'm like, what car were you in when this happened? And he's like, well, I was in my Black Thunderbird. And then I go back and look and I'm like, that Black Thunderbird was impounded 2 years earlier. You can't have been in the Black Thunderbird. So let's walk through this again. Which car were you in?
Without access to police records, Lauren relies on public records.
I figured out that Sam followed himself in the papers. And so a lot of the things he remembers, like when he was like, this body was discovered by a helicopter. How do you know that?
Right?
Like, there has to be a newspaper article about that. What were you, like, standing there waiting to find, you know? No, he's a news junkie. So I'm like, he's following himself in the papers.
Now, do you think he was doing that to find out if they had clues to him, or was it more of him, it was part of his psychology, that this was part of his fulfillment process?
Absolutely. It was like a part of the psychosexual process of this was that he was being recognized, right? Like, he was both invisible and recognized at the same time. So, you know, I think it's much more about the psychology than it was about evading anything, because I really think that he felt that he was above the law. And that played out for him for a long time until science caught up with him.
Lauren is credited by Roberts and other detectives with matching one of Little's L.A. confessions to a case. It's the only match that has been made so far. Through her questioning of Little and cross-checking his words against her maps and newspaper articles, she found a wrong turn in his memory, made the right turn, and it led her to an unsolved case in Long Beach that matched up. The victim's name was Alice.
I break the confessions down, and I look at, I'm like, what car was he driving? What did that intersection look like? What did it look like then? What did it look like now? I find historic aerials. And then I go and drive it. And sometimes I'm like, and this is how I solve the Alice case. I was like, he said it was on Central, and there were these two overpasses, you know, and he described it so clearly. And when I drove it, and I drove it again, and I drove it again, it just didn't look right. It wasn't consistent with his description. And I'm like, he's wrong about the location. Like, neither one of these overpasses, it did, like, I found out the businesses that were there at the time. I'm like, these don't work. And then I was like, is it possible you took a turn? Could you have taken a turn off Central? Which is the great thing about being able to actually talk to him. And he was like, oh, yeah. Maybe I did. Maybe I took a turn off Central. And I'm like, well, is it possible that you drove all the way to Long Beach? And he's like, it's totally possible. And he would, like, collapse time and collapse distances. He drove and drove and drove and drove and drove. It was all he did.
Lauren called on now-retired Detective Rick Jackson to help her with the legwork.
So we went down and looked at those locations, and this was some, I think it was 25 or 30 years later, and obviously some things had changed. Some things had been built up, but there was a field in the area, he as he described it to her. And so we came up with a couple of locations, And what we were trying to do is if we could pin it down to a location or two that we believed it happened in, I would then know what agency would be responsible for that case. She had done some newspaper.com searches and hadn't found it yet. But so eventually she went back and talked to Sam Little a little bit more. She did a little more digging into the newspaper.com articles and found an article that had been published in the Press Telegram right around the same time. She also remembered he said something like Dominica or Domenico. There was something about that name. Well, the place she found was on Dominguez. Initially, we thought it was maybe near Cal State Dominguez, but the actual murder that she found in the newspaper that Long Beach PD ended up being responsible, the investigating agency for that murder. But it happened on Dominguez. So, and it was the body was found by a bicyclist, which Sam told her he had read about the case within a day or two of when he committed the murder, and that a bicyclist had found the body. So that put it together for her. So then she contacted me and asked me if I would initiate contact with homicide detectives in Long Beach. Of course, I was retired, but I said I would.
Jackson brought Lauren and the case to the attention of the Long Beach police. They pulled the files on the unsolved case, and it is now in the process of being verified and cleared. I asked Jackson if he had ever worked with a civilian before in bringing a conclusion to a murder case. He had not.
Rarely do you have a set of circumstances that allows a journalist or a writer to gain access to the kind of material she's getting and then kind of intrinsically just flow into being one of the, you know, the investigators on the case, if you will. And that's what she's become. I mean, she has established a rapport with a serial killer just by going and doing interviews with him and gaining his confidence to tell his story to her. She's obviously got the passion because she's working her tail off doing research to add more victims. But she's very diligent. She's not just saying, okay, that's the one. She wants to double check and triple check and do what she can to confirm this is the one and not just something that's kind of close or similar. And then she leaves it up to the police department to make the call, whether they have the MO is so consistent, plus his admissions and having the knowledge that he has about a particular case, or whether there's DNA involved. She leaves that up to the police department. And it's become like with Long Beach, from me talking to them, they did meet with her. There'd been some back and forth calls. So, I mean, she's not technically a partner of theirs, but she's a piece of the puzzle that's moving toward putting these cases together so families can get results and get the knowledge that we know who killed your daughter or your mother or whatever the relationship is with the surviving families.
Lead Detective Mitzi Roberts agrees.
She was extremely helpful and still is. And then just her dogged investigative sort of research into the case to do what I don't have the time to do, to go into these other areas outside of LA City and find cases like in Long Beach and find cases that may be on the fringes of our city that could be him. She's like a citizen sleuth for sure.
We'll be back after these words from our sponsor. ...2020 hasn't been the easiest year. And if you've been feeling stuck or anxious or stressed, then you might want to check out BetterHelp. BetterHelp assesses your needs and matches you with your own licensed professional therapist without ever having to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room. It's available worldwide, and it's more affordable than traditional offline counseling. They even have financial aid available. BetterHelp offers access to licensed professional counselors who specialize in a broad range of expertise like depression, anxiety, stress, relationships, sleep, anger, and grief, which may not be locally available in many areas. This is not self-help. It's professional counseling that's convenient and everything you share is confidential. Join over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health. Get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/murderbook. That's betterhelp.com/murderbook for 10% off your first month. Now back to the podcast. Jillian Loren is writing a book about Sam Little, his victims, and the unusual relationship she has with the serial killer. It's called Behold the Monster. And most of all, she's telling the story of the victims, many of them unnamed and unfound. The book will be out next year and you can pre-order it now. Jillian has shared some of it with me, and I can tell you it's a haunting and empathic account of the damages this man left in his wake. These days, Loren has been concentrating on a handful of cases in Los Angeles. In his confessions, Little talked about taking the bodies of three of his victims from South L.A. north into the Hollywood Hills and Griffith Park. He told Ranger Holland that he rolled one of those bodies down a hillside into heavy brush, and they believed that she was never found. Jillian Loren is still looking. She's also been working extensively on two of the cases we talked about in the last episode, the woman Little said he killed during the riots in 1992, and the woman Little called T-Money, who he claimed was his last victim in Los Angeles. I asked Jillian about the 1992 case.
I like this one because there's a witness. There are some real specifics, and I think that, like he was saying, you know, he dumped her body on a manicured lawn that was behind a worldly building, is what he called it. And he said it was like a bank, or it was a loan company, or it was a... And I'm like, I don't know what a worldly building means, but what I think it means is it looked like something, not a mini mall. Like architecturally, right, there was something about it, right? It wasn't like a liquor store. It wasn't a mini mall. It was like, it was a bank. It was a church. It was a community center. It was a something. So... Oh, here's the weather. these were the only days it could have been raining. And then here, I can pull this up on my computer for you. But basically, I found this bank. So this is the good thing about having his ear, is that I can go back to him and go, fuck, are you talking about, you know? And then he says, oh, well, it was off, I remember passing a courthouse, I remember, you know, it was off Long Beach Avenue or Compton Avenue, and I found this bank that is on the corner of Long Beach Avenue and Compton Avenue, and or Long Beach Boulevard and Compton Avenue, and right around the corner is a church that has this manicured lawn.
T Money is another ghost that won't leave Loren alone.
1996, someone knew her.
She has taken Sam Little's drawing of Team Money and posted it in the area where Little says he killed her in 1996. She has gone into restaurants and bodegas and businesses showing the drawing and asking questions. She has even had Little's drawing turned into a 3D rendering of Team Money and given her a Facebook page that asks, "Do you know this woman?"
It seems recent enough, and she sounds like a big enough personality that I'm going to be able to hit on somebody who knew her or remembered her or saw her or something. And he picked her up on Manchester and San Pedro. She hung out at this liquor store. I found the liquor store. And I talked to people around there. It has a different owner now. But there were definitely people in the neighborhood who remembered that it was a hang at that time and that people would hang out along this one wall. But Sam told me recently about another alleyway that she used to hang out at. So I still want to go check that out. I haven't had a chance to yet. And the problem is, so he took her to a place on Slauson and San Pedro, which he described as, it was like, he said it was a famous restaurant. It was not a chain, so it wasn't like a Popeyes. It wasn't, it wasn't a McDonald's. And there is, like, there is that restaurant there. It used to be a taco spot. Now it's a chicken place. And I talked to people around there. I talked to the people who work in the factories, like all along the alleyway next door. No one remembers a murder. There were definitely people who were there at that time. And then he said it was across the street from a health clinic that he used to go to with Jean. Well, the health clinic is two blocks down. It's there. It's the Hubert Humphrey. It's like a big clinic. So I went there too, and I talked to people, and I have to follow up on some of those inquiries because I got some numbers of people who had been there at that time. But I looked at all of the corners around there at that time, and there wasn't a restaurant. So it's like, which corner was it? And I don't think he's intentionally lying. I don't think he's intentionally lying to the cops. I don't think he's intentionally lying to me anymore. I think that he probably did at the beginning, but I think he's over it now. And I think he's aging and he's confused. So that's why I sort of have to go out and do the legwork and then go back to him and say, "Hey, you know that clinic? Can you remember exactly where this restaurant was that was around the clinic?" And anyway, Team Money is my biggest frustration because I feel like I have so much on her. And it was recent, so there's going to be DNA if we can find a body. And there are so many details, and she seems so memorable. So, she's my big sadness.
While Lauren's focus and connection is definitely with the victims, she has also perhaps gotten closer to Sam Little than anybody else alive. She believes his success as a killer is partly due to luck, but also his own cunning street smarts.
I think he was on the fringe of society and he picked the victims who were there with him. But I think that it proved itself true time and time again for him that no one gave a shit. I mean, they had him for murder. Attempted murder. They had him for rape. They had him for assault. They had him for a million things, a million times. And, I mean, not a million times, but, you need more than one hand to count. And
And he got off again and again. No one cared because they were prostitutes and they were like, they're not reliable. So.
You keep saying that no one cared. Why are you doing this? Is it because you care about these women, or is it more like you are, I don't want to say having fun because it's a very grim process here, but you're into the sleuthing side of it.
Yeah, I'm not having fun. I'm not having fun.
So why are you doing this?
Because now how can I not?
I'm Michael Connelly, and you've been listening to Murder Book. We will wrap up the season in the next episode when we bring you up to date on the case. And after that, we'll do a sit-down with some of the women who stopped Sam Little and get final thoughts on the case. So if you have questions, you can email them to podcast@michaelconnelly.com, and we will try to get to as many as possible. Also, I want to take a second here to make a correction in regard to episode 8, where I mischaracterized one of Sam Little's first victims. I should have described her as a transgender woman, and I apologize if I offended anyone in getting that wrong. Thanks for listening. Episode 10 comes next. I want to thank our listeners, our sponsors, and our consultants. Murder Book is produced and edited by Terrell Lee Langford. Music is provided by Grace Kelly, including our theme song, By the Grave. Post-production services are provided by Authentic, and Emma Kikuchi is post-production supervisor. Jane Davis is in charge of our social media, and if you want to see photos and other material from the case, go to murderbookpodcast.com. Remember, subscribe to the podcast at applepodcasts.com/murderbook if you want to be alerted to new episodes and other announcements. And if you have a friend who likes true crime podcasts, make sure you tell them about this one. Finally, leave us a rating and a review at Apple Podcasts. This is Michael Connelly saying thanks for listening.